This podcast of the Radio Cafe is made possible with the help of our webmaster, Studio X. You can hear it and thousands of programs like it on our website, santafe.radiocafe.org. I'm here today with Craig Smith. He's an author and journalist who wrote for many years for the Santa Fe New Mexican. His new book is called A Vision of Voices, John Crosby and the Santa Fe Opera. It's a personal look into the life of John Crosby, who's the man who was personally responsible for creating the Santa Fe Opera Company. You can see Craig this weekend at Collected Works Bookstore. That's 3 p.m. on Sunday, May 10th, this weekend. Welcome, Craig, to the show.
Thank you very much.
So we're talking about John Crosby, who was involved, it would seem, in every aspect of founding the Santa Fe Opera. You said something about him. When it came to business, he was consistently attentive, even obsessed. When it came to art, he was all business. What kind of commitment does it take to start an opera company in the middle of the desert?
It takes an amazing amount of intestinal fortitude. It takes an amazing amount of chutzpah. And it takes a sense of adventure that is rare to find in anybody. John Crosby came from comfortable circumstances, and that helped in that he had family money behind him when he began the opera company. But the sheer magnitude of the task, even today, almost 60 years later, is unbelievable. So it takes dedication, a little dysfunction, and a good deal of courage.
How did he choose New Mexico? The book makes it out that he was in love with the place from a very young age. He had this idyllic upbringing, riding horses past Georgie O'Keeffe's house, hiking in the Jemez Mountains. Do you think he chose this place out of sheer love for the landscape?
He loved the landscape. He loved the place. But he also had a very practical side because, A, this was off the beaten track. He could put it together, and not every critic in the world would be here. And since he was going to be the chief conductor, and he really had not had very much formal training, it was a good place to try things out, as it were. Even though he wanted to do the very best job he could all the time, he still had to learn on the job. And in addition, he found that off the beaten track like this, certain expenses could be lower. Transportation expenses for singers and technicians, for example. He also felt that the acoustic of the area and the ambiance of the area made it a perfect place to plug the final key into Santa Fe's art scene, because the visual arts, the literary arts, folk arts, Pueblo arts were all extremely strong. And there was some music, though, but not opera.
And so the acoustics in that environment are perfect until it rains.
Well, the acoustics are still great, but the orchestra and the audience used to suffer tremendously when the rain would come through the open roof.
There's a statue of Stravinsky at the opera that I always go to visit during the intermission.
Yes.
And now that I know about Stravinsky's personal connection to the opera, I think it's especially appropriate to see him out there, especially when it's drizzling and he's all wet.
When he's all wet, yes. There are many stories about how he would be conducting in the rain when he was here. He did conduct quite a few times when he was here over the years. And he had great affection for John Crosby, not only because he liked John personally, but because the opera mounted every one of his music theater works. And that was rare back in the 50s, even with a composer as famous as Stravinsky.
How did Stravinsky and Crosby get in touch and get involved?
There was a woman here named Miranda Levy, whom everybody called Mirandy, Miranda Masoko Levy, and she knew Stravinsky through a series of unusual encounters, and John Crosby said to her shortly before the theater opened, "Wouldn't it be great if we could have a name?" And she went to the telephone and called someone she called Pussycat, and Pussycat was Stravinsky, and she talked him into considering coming out, and when she told John Crosby who she'd been speaking to, he said, "How dare you call him Pussycat? How dare you not call him Maestro?" But it worked out.
Maestro Pussycat, you say, had all of his work
all of his music theater works and some of his big choral works performed here in Santa Fe over the course of 8 years.
Which I understand is an unusual honor for a composer.
Unusual honor indeed. he's one of the very few composers to have that many works done at the Santa Fe Opera.
And like Crosby, Stravinsky was enchanted by the New Mexican environment.
He loved it here. He was taken with every aspect of it. He was taken with the quiet. He was taken with the friendly people. And he was taken with the fact that his work was being done in such a superb way.
There was an anecdote that I found moving. It was on one of his early trips here. He was taken to Santo Domingo for a feast day dance, and you describe him in the book watching the dance and just weeping.
Yes, that was the very first time he, Mirandi, and Stravinsky's wife had met, and she took them to Santo Domingo. And she said there was a lot of dust, but it wasn't the dust that made him weep. He was very impressed with the dancing on the feast day.
Do you think perhaps he saw a connection between the theatrics of the dance and the theatrics of the opera?
Oh, I think possibly. He had a great love for Russian folk tradition and music, and he also understood the place of folk music in the general culture. So I think he was seeing and hearing something that resonated with him very deeply.
So let's talk about John Crosby. He came from a well-to-do New England family.
Mm-hmm.
He spent time in a preparatory ranch school out here in New Mexico.
Correct.
He was drafted into the Army,
mm-hmm.
where he was quickly promoted from being a machine gunner to being a bugler.
Well, he was actually a bandmaster, but there was no number for that in the Army Corps regulations, so they called him a bugler.
So they called him a bugler in spite of the fact that he played nearly every instrument that he could lay his hands on.
He played violin, he played accordion, he played trombone. He had to fill in. It was a dance band he was playing in.
And at some point during the war, they were forced to take up residence in a theater, and share a theater with a German opera company.
Correct, yes, yes.
Putting on an Offenbach show, weren't they?
Yes, they were putting on The Tales of Hoffman. And they didn't like the fact that they had to share the theater with a bunch of American GIs who happened to be musicians. It was one of those kind of things that seemed to happen to John Crosby during his life, these odd little encounters. He would certainly learn a lot about being a conductor and the difficulties involved in artistic personalities.
You describe production skirmishes, and I'm wondering,
yes,
what a band of American GIs would, what kind of issue they would have with a German opera company.
Mainly it's who got on the stage the most, you know, for having enough time to do your proper rehearsals. That's, I'm sure, where most of the friction came from. And of course the war was just over, and there was still a great deal of ill feeling going on, and fear, I'm sure. And no matter what time of year it is, no matter how peaceful or warlike the environment, people in opera are going to find something to argue about.
Do you think being in the Army would be a good requisite to running an opera company? The man strikes me as being very organized and very, very disciplined, really.
He was extremely organized. He fit well into the Army discipline. He didn't seem to have a bit of a problem being an assistant machine gunner. And I think that helped him understand the importance of the chain of command, that everything flowed from the top and you had to follow regulations because that's the best way to get things done. So, yes.
Which is similar to an opera company. in many ways.
Very much similar to an opera company. There's only one person who's in charge.
So somebody who understands how to work in the Army would be a good pick for somebody to run an opera.
As long as they have the requisite musical background, yes.
So after the Army, Crosby comes back to the U.S., and he goes to Yale, where he meets Frank. Can you tell me about this guy and what their relationship is?
His name was Frank McGee. In fact, he just died January 1st of this year at age 90. They became close friends, companions, and lovers. And they did musical shows together. Frank had a theatrical background and was an actor, as well as being very good on the business side. And so he wound up becoming involved in the opera the way John Crosby involved so many people. He was extremely good at meeting someone and drawing them in to the opera company. They had a very close relationship for a number of years.
Now, you repeatedly in this book describe John Crosby as a loner, somebody who's kind of isolated in his work, who has a public persona but lets very few people into his his private circle. Now, was Frank an exception to this rule? He seems like the one close relationship that Crosby really had.
The one we really know about. Crosby did have a number of friends, people he was close to, but there always was a certain reticence in him, a rectitude. He didn't let people in completely, I don't think anybody, except perhaps Frank and a very few others, because he seemed to realize that this job was going to take every bit of his work and his ability, and I think he was a savant type. He had amazing skills in certain areas, but his human interaction skills were pretty bad in terms of understanding how people reacted, in terms of how he would react with people. Many of the singers have told me how in the early years they would all be having breakfast at the Opera Ranch because they lived there in the early years. And Crosby would go clumping by to water the trees, and he wouldn't even see them. He wouldn't look at them or talk to them. That's the way he always was. Sometimes he was aware of you, and sometimes he simply wasn't.
And you describe a legendary temper where if you mess something up at the opera, that he would hold you personally accountable to the success or failure of the entire company.
Well, yes, he took things very personally. He didn't necessarily run around firing people right and left the way some famous opera impresarios have done, but he knew when a mistake happened and he didn't want it ever to happen again. He would yell, he would slam doors. Sometimes he would be very cold. But you were never in doubt when John Crosby was upset about something. And in a way, you have to run a place with a reign of terror. Sometimes people do it with a little gentler hand than he did. But an opera company is a chaotic place. And to make it all work together, you do have to come down pretty heavily.
Yeah, your descriptions of him remind me of things I've read about Steve Jobs and these other captains of industry, and the way they react and the way they hold people accountable. And I imagine it's the type of personality that it takes to keep something like an opera company together.
No question. And don't forget that he was not only running it and dealing with all the administrative side, he was conducting. He would conduct two or three operas from the very beginning. Later on, he would open the season conducting the first opera, and then when the annual Richard Strauss offering came along, he would move over to that opera, and someone else would take over the first one. So he would conduct two operas for many, many years.
He also had a hand in the design of the building, and he also even, you said, had a hand in directing traffic in the parking lot from time to time.
He did everything. If he saw a lack somewhere, he would pop up and do it. In the parking lot, he would time how long it took to empty it, and he was very proud that it took sometimes just 26 minutes. He knew how many buttons were used in the costume shop, quite literally. He knew how much water was used. He was an absolute maniac about saving water and preserving the land. All that was part of his personality.
You mentioned Richard Strauss,
mm-hmm.
for whom Crosby had a special affinity.
Yes.
And I believe for a couple decades there was a Strauss show every year.
That's correct.
What was Crosby's obsession with Strauss?
One person who worked with him for many years said that the complexity of Strauss mirrored the complexity of his own mind, and that excited him. It made him interested in how it worked. He also loved German music, specifically Strauss. He liked the story possibilities. He liked the way the music and the drama worked together. So that was his great interest, plus the fact that Strauss was not being done a great deal when the Santa Fe Opera began. The Santa Fe Opera gave the American premieres of many Strauss operas, and that's quite a major accomplishment because many of them are very large and very complicated to produce. And he loved conducting Strauss. He loved to swim in the sound that came up out of the orchestra.
There's a lot of sound that comes out of Strauss.
There's a lot of sound that comes out of Strauss. You know, Ariadne auf Naxos has a small orchestra, but everything else pretty much is gigantic. And he enjoyed doing that. He enjoyed working with the singers. And he enjoyed putting that complex puzzle together.
Was there a challenge at first, fitting a Strauss orchestra into the Santa Fe Opera pit?
There was, although he at first did stick with a number of the operas that were not absolutely huge. And he also would, from necessity, work without maybe all the strings, for example, that he would have liked to have. So it was a chamber music approach for a long time. Now the company can fit everything they need for Strauss into the pit, and it's very successful that way. He enjoyed seeing the pit expand every time the theater was worked on, because he knew exactly how many more players he could fit in.
He seems like he was very good at improvising, finding solutions to problems as they came along.
Yes, he was. Sometimes the problems were pretty severe, but he always seemed to find a way. He had a way with certain donors of being able to extricate funds from them because they believed in him, and he could be very charming. You know, he really had a charming side to him. But that charm was driven by the fact that for him, the Santa Fe Opera was the most important thing in his life, and by extension, the life of anyone who came in contact with him. I think he judged people on how they reacted to the opera and how much they supported it.
Tell us about the Sweeney Opera House.
All right. There was a great fire at the opera in 1967 after about midway through the season, and the place burnt down. There still is no evidence as to exactly what happened, although arson has always been suspected. And the very morning of the fire, because it happened early in the morning hours, two members of the board went and convinced the head of the school board to let them use Sweeney Gymnasium, which is where City Hall is now. It was the high school then. They got permission. They sent the word out around the country. Sets were built, costumes were improvised, and in 2 days they opened again with The Barber of Seville by Rossini. So, you know, within 48 hours, an opera company had risen from the ashes, as it were. And they finished that season in the opera house there in the gymnasium.
They actually finished the season in the high school.
They finished in the high school.
And your description of Crosby's reaction to the fire, you say he showed up, and even as they were showing him the extent of the damage, he was already issuing orders about how they were going to manage to complete the season.
Yes.
In a local high school. It's really remarkable.
It is remarkable. In fact, when you look back on it, it seems impossible. If something happened today comparably to an organization, the thought of them being able to go on seems ludicrous. But everybody pulled together then, even as they still pull together at the opera. But you mustn't forget, in those early years, it was still very intimate. It was not as big as it has become, and everyone knew everybody else. Also in Santa Fe, everybody knew everybody else. And Santa Fe had taken the opera to its heart. It really had.
Let's talk real quick about the season coming up.
Yes, 2015.
We'd love to hear your opinion, of course, about what's going to happen.
All right. What's interesting about this to me is it really is the kind of season that John Crosby might have done. There's a comedy to open. There's a Mozart piece. There's a Verdi barn burner. There's a Strauss. And then there's a world premiere. The Daughter of the Regiment is a very frothy, funny, tuneful, and exciting French romp. The idea is there's a girl who's been adopted by an entire regiment, and there's a young man in love with her, and that's enough right there to start the action. And then a very rare Mozart from when he was about 17, La Finta Giardiniera, which means the pretend gardener girl. And it's an opera full of disguises and missed identities, and very tuneful, very unusual for Mozart. And I think it's going to be a sleeper and very exciting. There are some wonderful singers in it. The Verdi Rigoletto has not been done since, I believe, 2000. And that is a great tragedy. The jester whose own jesting brings about tragedy in his own family life. It's a big, powerful piece, and there again are some wonderful singers taking part in that. And it's an anchor piece. It's the kind of repertoire that should be done and is often done. So it's a traditional nod. Strauss's Salome has not been done in a number of years, and it's a fascinating piece, after all, based on the biblical story of John the Baptist and Salome, who danced before King Herod and then demanded John the Baptist's head in a silver platter. I think that one's going to be a revelation in terms of Strauss's music again, because, as I say, it's been a while since it's been done here. It's a powerful piece, an unusual piece, one act. And then finally, the world premiere of Cold Mountain by Jennifer Higdon, based on the novel by Charles Fraser. And it's about a Civil War veteran and almost an escapee trying to get back home to his beloved. And Higdon is a well-respected composer. This is her first opera, I believe. And a lot of people will be coming to take a look at this and see how it comes out.
If you were in the unfortunate circumstance where you can only see one of these shows this summer, which one is not to be missed?
Unfair question. I can't hedge this one, can I? I would say that I would have to go with Cold Mountain because it's following the tradition of the Santa Fe Opera. It is audacious, and it's an undertaking that a lot of people would not do, and I think for that very reason it would be worth seeing. Plus the fact that it has a story that still resonates with us.
The show to see this summer is Cold Mountain, written by the Pulitzer Prize-winning Jennifer Higdon.
Correct.
The book to read is called A Vision of Voices, John Crosby and the Santa Fe Opera by our very own Craig Smith, who will be appearing at Collected Works this weekend, Sunday at 3 o'clock, May 10th. Craig Smith, thank you so much for being with us on the show.
Thank you very much, Max.